chance to look at them, did they this time actually address the actual issues in the PDP?
The IPC did. That was the first contribution, so, and they did indeed. And, well, Mikey did very well this time around.
Yeah.
So basically what we haven't received anything from is the ISPs.
Okay.
And, well, the NCUC statement is still rather a response to the web posting.
To what we're working
way
on.
Back.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. The recordings are now started.
Thank you. Well, the first thing I thought I'd ask here is, did I... The little summary that I created, did it accurately capture what we've done so far? I mean, Olaf, your notes were really helpful in doing that. So I very much appreciate that. But I thought I should at least ask people to take a, you know, to see whether I've grouped them accordingly, you know, the way we have agreed.
I'm sort of reading as we go. It looks pretty good to me as I skim it.
Well, obviously we can make corrections in it if I've done anything incorrectly, so we don't need to spend a lot of time going over it again. We're going to have to when we get done with all 19 recommendations, and if I've figured it correctly, I think we've covered 9 of the 19. And we need to look at the total package when we get done and kind of revisit it to make sure that we're comfortable with what we're recommending as a total package, and so we can do that then. Certainly, if anybody finds anything there, communicate it, because I quite likely could have made some errors there. All right. Well, shall we start on recommendation? I think it's. Let me get back up here. In group 2,
eight.
Recommendation 8, is that right?
Yeah, that's my take on it.
Yeah, so, and that one is whether additional provisions should be included in the TDRP on how to handle disputes when multiple transfers have occurred. I had raised some questions there that I'd like some responses on. Tim, you're probably the best one to answer my questions. Now, the current policy allows disputes to be filed within 180 days. In fact, that particular issue I saw on the registrar public email list just in the past week or so. Is that much time really needed?
Yeah, I think you'd probably find some registrars might think more time is needed, but I wouldn't think less.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know, and I kind of suspected that.
But you know, honestly, I mean, when you get much past 6 months, then you begin to get into some pretty old.
It just complicates it more.
It's pretty difficult. Yeah.
Yeah, it really does. Is there another way to deal with this? Because it does get, and of course, this whole threat, the thread on your list was. Having to do with this where there's multiple transfers, and I think Ross was the one that said, well, it just goes back to the first one, and if it was wrong, then you go right back. It's still kind of complicated. Is there any way to deal with this, or just, you know, leave it alone?
Yeah, I think, you know, it gets much deeper than just what it might look like on the surface, because where it gets really complicated is trying to figure out, you know, who, like Ross was trying to make a distinction between a listed registrant and a legal registrant.
Right.
And, you know, that's just a concept that's, you know, we haven't really defined well, and it's pretty much up to registrars to just come to agreement on it. You know, there's no definitive method to say, yeah, here's how we show who the original registrant was. And then a lot of those cases, you know, what happens is the registrar says, well, look, I've got a good FOA because according to your who is at the time, you know, this was the contact, that's who I have the FOA from, and, you know, that's the end of the matter as far as they're concerned. So I think there's, you know, is it something that might need to be addressed at some point? I think so, but I think it's a little bit different issue than just the multiple transfers, I think it gets more down to identifying, the legal registrant, I guess, if you want to put it that way.
So that might be a good point to capture, Olaf.
Yeah, and because when we talk about multiple transfers, that is multiple transfers from registrar to registrar, and we're not talking about transfers from registrant to registrant here.
That complicates, of course, in these kind of situations, that complicates it even more, and I think that's covered in a little bit in another one of the recommendations. So.
And I think that probably, though, most of the issues that arise around transfers, multiple transfers from registrar to registrar, that when you get back to the basic problem, it stems from some type of hijacking or somebody taking office a name that they didn't really have rights to, and so you still get back to that ownership issue.
Mm-hmm.
Who had rights to approve that transfer? And who is the actual registrant?
Yeah, I think that's the reason that I'd lobby for certainly putting this into a policy discussion somewhere, is because that's clearly a hijacking tendency. What causes that? This is Mike.
Yeah, I think it makes sense to include this, and we'll have to decide whether it's one of its own. Let me ask another question, and Tim, probably this is directed at you first of all, but is there any sense in combining this one with number 9 that's in the next grouping? That's the one on whether special provisions are needed for change of registrant simultaneous to transfer within a period. Now, I'm not sure that there's even a way of dealing with number 9, but I bring it up now just because I guess just looking for your opinion as an expert.
Yeah, my opinion is that it certainly could help the situation. I think they could be related. And in fact, as probably everybody knows, GoDaddy's process for change of registrant requires the parties to agree that they don't transfer the name for 60 days, just for that reason, because once that ownership change has taken place, we have so many that happen, and there's so many customers and so many transactions, we can't, sit down and look at each one in detail form.
Yeah, right.
And so we like that window for a complaint to come in or for us to examine the situation a little bit closer. And in many cases with registrants who call and talk to us about it, once we figure out what the situation is, we let it go. But it's all related, because what happens is when that registrant changes, if the transfer takes place right away, especially if multiple ones take place right away, then we have a very difficult time trying to correct this.
Yeah, right.
All right, Tim. Are you done?
Yeah.
This is Mike. One of the things you're going to see in our comments is something I'm not entirely in agreement with, but the DC is saying in their comments that they would like to reduce the number of 60-day holds in these processes as much as possible, the perception being that those 60-day holds are often used to keep legitimate transfers from happening between registrars. And the alternative that's proposed is that other mechanisms than long holds be used to secure domains. And
the hold a problem, Mike, if there's an easy way to get it off a hold, kind of like the lock situation?
Yeah, it could be that that's the solution. I think that Tim's objective is spot on, which is we need some way to make sure that hijacking isn't taking place. And the BC is saying that they'd like to see some other mechanism, and it may be to accomplish that. And it may be that the way to do that is, as you say, to have an easy way to remove the hold. But on the other hand, that may just open up a security hold.
Yeah, I just want to, we have to find a balance, because if we want secure transfers, then they're not going to be as easy as we could make them. If we want transfers as easy as we could make them, then they're not going to be secure.
Yeah.
You can't put up both ways. And so I think that's the thing that everyone has to realize.
Yep.
And then it depends on the situation you're in as to what you want. You know, if you're just trying to transfer your name, then you just want it to be easy. If your name's been taken or, you know, there's some issue, then, you know, you say, why isn't it more secure? But, you know, it can't be both ways. There's got to be some kind of balance.
Yeah, and I agree 100% with that. This is the classic information security dilemma.
Right.
So
now, is this one then one that is okay in the group that it's in, or is it one of those that maybe should be a PDP on its own?
Which one are you talking about?
Number 8.
We were considering whether to group 8 and 9 as well.
Well, yeah, I'm gonna get to that. I just first of all talking about
Which group are we gonna put it in?
Well, it's in a group already by Tom's. We're using Tom's grouping. It's in the group enhancement to the current transfer dispute policy. So it's in the second group. According to Tom's thing, I haven't put it into my document yet, Mike. Okay, because we hadn't covered it yet.
Yeah, and I haven't got Tom's document in front of me. What's the name of Tom's document? That's
the one we've been working off of all along.
I know.
You need me to send that now?
No, I'm sure I've got it. I just need the name of it.
Transfer-grouping. _ draft version 1. Well, anyway.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I've got that open, but I didn't see any groupings there. Sorry.
They're
there's a
heading in bold, actually.
Yeah, it's in bold.
I'm lame. I got it now.
Okay, good. Okay.
I think that's fine in that group.
Okay. Now, is there any reason? Now, I think we've got 9 in the third grouping. Is there any value in combining 9 with 8, or is 9 not even achievable?
I think it would be delightful to combine 9 with 8 and put it in that same grouping, because it's just a different facet of sort of the same problem, in a way. I agree with you, Chuck, on that.
Tim, what do you think?
I think so too. Just given, you know, our experience that the root of the problem of one is the other, it would seem to make sense to me.
And now 9 is grouped under new issues, but that's perhaps not so material, really.
Yeah, I think if we pushed it back up into the clump along with 8, that would make a lot of sense.
And we may decide to rename the groupings, too. That's kind of a cosmetic thing that we can take care of later if they don't make sense when we get done. So that may be okay.
So we call it group 2.
Yeah.
Combined,
yeah.
Then.
Yeah. And we can just call it group 2 for now. And I used Tom's categories for that document that I created, but we can change those, of course. I was just trying to provide some continuity there. So,
yeah.
Okay. Now, since we're on 9 for the moment, again, some questions I raised on that one were whether it's, you know, I know that this is a problem for VeriSign in our dispute resolution processes. This one has come up often. No surprise, I'm sure, to you, Tim. But it's not clear that there's a workable way to solve it. Is it still worth spending some time on? It might be. I mean, if we could solve it, it'd be great. From our point of view, I'm talking about from VeriSign's point of view.
I think that we should set the goals out and let the implementations perhaps fall to another discussion.
Well, I'm good with that. You know, I just wanted to, you know, I talked with Barbara Steele, who manages the team that does the dispute resolutions for us, and, you know, we were trying to rack our brains how we would really do it, and we kept running into walls. But I'm perfectly okay with you know, having a PDP that includes this one and takes a crack at it.
Yeah, I think if nothing else, setting out the issue, having a conversation about it, exploring some alternatives, is a good conversation for the community, because if we come to the point where we say, gee, this is really too hard to solve, then everybody knows that it's too hard to solve, and perhaps they take a little bit more care with that kind of transfer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree, just given that it's registrars that raised the issue, and I think they would like to see some dialogue about it.
Good. No, I'm very supportive of that. Yeah. So, okay. I think we could go then to 14, back in group two. Which is whether review of registry level dispute decisions is needed. Apparently some complaints exist about inconsistency there. You know, nobody's ever, as far as I know, for us, and we probably get more disputes in this than anybody else by far, and we don't get very many, but it's like two or three a month is all. But has anybody ever used the appeal process? There's an appeal process if there's something that's inconsistent or think that is wrong. I'm not aware that they have.
And not that I know of. We rarely use the DRP at all,
mm-hmm.
simply because you find it much easier to deal with it directly.
And which was the intent of the policy anyway, was to first
right.
of all encourage registrars to work it out. So that's great.
And we're the subject of them once in a while. You know, somebody will file one.
Uh-huh.
And we rarely dispute it, though. I mean, we usually look at the situation, and, you know, if the registrar is convinced there was an issue, then we
don't
dispute the thing.
Well, Tim, are you aware of any inconsistencies? You know, the problem with this particular one is that without identifying what, you know, where the inconsistencies have been, it's really hard to evaluate it.
I agree. I'm not aware of anything specific, but I think before we could consider addressing it, we'd have to have more specific than what is there.
Yeah, in other words, we should identify what the inconsistencies are, because those may be able to be dealt with directly, and
right,
we should
right.
encourage use of the appeal process.
I think that's really what this one is asking for, isn't it?
Well, there is an appeal process already.
But is it consistent across registries?
Well, it's in the policy. It's what it's supposed to be. And,
yes.
and that's what I'm trying to identify. If it's not, then it's a compliance issue, not a policy issue.
Well, and I think, you know, when I read this, it says a review of dispute decisions. I agree that this really reads more like a compliance thing, but perhaps the policy question is whether or not to launch such a review.
Yeah, but even that's not the review could be the first step in a policy.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think there is policy in this one. I think this is really inappropriately placed in a list of policy decisions.
So does it make sense on this one to move it to the delete from policy recommendations, but recommend that a review maybe by the ICANN compliance team to see whether there are indeed some inconsistencies?
Yeah, I mean, I think we could move it to the delete and then say that we support going ahead with such a review, but we didn't view it as a policy.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah, others, what do you think? Is that a good way to handle this one?
Yeah.
Okay, we're making good headway.
Yeah, wow. And so let me wrap myself up here.
Put everybody up.
All right. Good. Well, that's great. All right. So now where we're at then, that brings us to 16, huh? We're on a roll. whether dispute options for registrants should be developed and implemented as part of the policy. I've heard this one a lot, but how on earth do you do it? Now, I actually came up with, I don't see how registries could do it, because we can't authenticate the registrant. So anybody could give us file a complaint, and, you know, we have to go back to the registrar. The only idea that I came up with this morning when I was reviewing this was maybe, again, that some process could be put in place through the ICANN compliance team. But even then, they're going to have to, you know, they don't have the means of authenticating. They're going to have to go back to the registrars and authenticate whether the person filing the complaint is really a legitimate complainer or not.
Yeah, and this is one that I'm really keen on, and let me speak to it. I think that the goal, at least from my perspective, is some way for a registrant to launch a process and not having to depend, you know, in terms of the mechanics of validating the legitimacy of that, I would tend to leave that to an implementation team. But the thing that's coming through to me in all of the constituents that I talk to is that they are frustrated because they sometimes can't get the attention of their registrar and thus can't get a process initiated. And so what they're looking for is just a way to kick a process off. And if it turns out that authentication is hard, then we have to identify that as something to be figured out, but still leave the goal in place to give the registrant a way to kick off the process.
Yeah, to at least kick off some investigation or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Does it have to be, but does it have to be transfer specific? I mean, you know, there's, for example, there's the ICANN, you know, registrar complaint process, but, you know, it's not real well known.
Yeah, and that's kind of a big hammer to drop on something as focused as this.
What do you mean by a big hammer in this case?
Well, isn't that one more broadly aimed at dissatisfaction with registrar performance and a whole bunch of other stuff?
I don't think it has to be.
Well, and perhaps that's the thing to do is to say, take a look at the existing. I always thought of that as more of a customer service complaint kind of cycle.
You're partly right. It's sort of they accumulate the complaints, and that would then kick off the ultimate weapon, sort of, from an ICANN side.
And see, I think that's
really what this is, Mike. I think it's a customer service issue. If a registrant is trying to contact its registrar and can't get a response, or they won't cooperate if they're, you know, challenging the transfer, then that's a customer service issue, and it seems like it should go through, you know, if we're going to have the process, there should be a single process for those kinds of issues for registrants to raise, and so that there's a single kind of, you know, collection of this stuff so that we can track what's happening with various registrars. So something like that exists. I just think, you know, does that need to be refined? But it shouldn't focus just on transfers.
Right.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it is good to focus it, to include in any revision to the transfer policy a communication, if nothing else, within the transfer policy that communicates what registrars, what process they should use if they encounter that situation. That wouldn't be very hard to do, but it might be very valuable to have that in the transfer policy.
Well, and another approach would be, I think the problem that a registrant might have, let's say that I lose my domain in January, and I submit to the complaint process, and it takes until July for enough of those to accumulate. Maybe the thing to do is to tweak that process to say, well, issues where a registrant is trying to recapture a domain from hijacking don't have to be accumulated. They can be processed immediately so that you don't lose all that time of building up the critical mass.
I question whether they should be accumulated at all.
I mean, yeah, me too. That's what I was thinking.
Well, I get five complaints, and you know, some of them are like a month old. I mean, it's too late. I mean, you know, the customer left, or we've resolved it otherwise. You know, it's just like, why don't we get them as they happen when we can respond to them in a timely way?
Well, see, then what that says is that we leave this in the PDP process, and perhaps what we've started to do is describe a bit of the way that we solve it. But I think that the question of whether or not to include this in a PDP as a topic is the one that I'd like to zero us in on now, and I would lobby that we do include it, and that, you know, what we've started to describe is perhaps a way to accomplish it, which is the first question you had, Chuck, which is,
yeah, right.
You know, can we do this at all? And I think, I don't know if that's the right one, but it sounds pretty good to me. And
Olaf, you might even, of course, I know you're capturing some of these thoughts we're having, but does it make sense to just touch base with Stacy on this with regard to whether something like this would be best, just for information that we would feed into if a PDP was initiated, we'd fit into that, to see whether it would make sense to just use the existing customer service process or some other process specifically for transfers.
And I think
right.
I think I know half the answer.
Go ahead.
Half the answer is that, well, then we become the customer complaint board and we'll be inundated.
Yeah, that's probably true.
So whether it's really practical to open that
door. Yeah, you're right.
Up.
Yeah, I understand that.
This is Tim. Can I?
Yeah, please.
What I think we should make it clear is that, for one thing, I don't buy that old league. I mean, if a registrant has a customer service issue, they should be able to use the ICANN complaint system, period. Whatever that complaint is about. What I don't think we want to do is say that a registrant can initiate a dispute resolution process for a transfer through ICANN. That, I think, would open up
yeah.
a nightmare for ICANN. But I think we should make it clear, and I don't think we need policy for it, to interject a note into the policy statement for the transfers that says, if you have a complaint or a problem with the registrar over transfers, here's the mechanism if you're not getting a response, is you complain to ICANN, just like you do anything else. But so I don't have a problem if we want to put this as a PDP type of thing, but I think the resolution doesn't have to be policy related.
Yeah, other than maybe, I think later on we'll get to one where it talks about making certain things, making sure that all registrars make the transfer conditions and so forth, you know, openly available to all their registrants, and something like this could be part of that.
But yeah, and the one thing I'd like to add, you know, I don't want to lose sight of the registrant who's lost their name. The clock is ticking, days are slipping by. There's this urgency notion that says, "Dang, I don't want to just file a complaint. I want to chase after that runaway domain."
Yeah,
it may be that filing the actual dispute resolution process by a registrant is too big a leap. I can understand that. But I don't want it to just go into a black hole either and then...
Well, that goes back to Tim's comment that, you know, there probably shouldn't be this queuing up, but rather hopefully, transfer issues would be considered urgent enough that they would get processed quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that if we could make that clear... That would address the concern that's coming from the constituents that I talk to, which is, I won't repeat, but at the same time, I certainly understand the issue of validating the legitimacy of these things and having end users actually able to trigger a complex process.
Right, and they might do it to their detriment because if they're trying to contact the registrar and they're not responsive, that's one thing, but... You'll have, if we allow that, you'll have cases where the first step they'll take is to initiate a DRP, when in reality they might be able to resolve it quicker through the registrar.
Right.
That registrar is responsive. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I think the topic is worthy of a good substantive policy discussion that results in a process that works both for registrants, but also for registries and registrars.
So it seems to make sense to leave 16 in the group that it's in right now. Is that correct for now?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, good. 19 then. is whether requirements or best practices should be put into place for registrars to make information on transfer dispute resolution options available to registrants. That's what I was just talking about. To me, this seems like a no-brainer, but it certainly could be left. I'm not saying drop it. I'm just saying it's probably an easy one. Am I wrong on that?
I think that's right.
Tim?
Yeah, I don't see why it wouldn't be. I mean, it's, you know, publicly available on ICANN's website, and, you know, to make that information available to registrants.
And, well, of course, it's not for us to decide, but obviously it says requirements or best practices. This almost seems to me, and it's not time to even be deciding that, but it seems like it should be a requirement that this kind of information be made available to registrants. It could be just on a website. I'm not saying, you know, a big expensive effort, but making sure it's readily available.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think this is,
and that's okay in this grouping, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then if it's a requirement, then it becomes,
well, that'll be the policy. That I think,
yeah,
is what the PDP has to decide. Should it be a requirement or a best practice and so forth, you know?
Yeah.
One of the things, Tim, is I'm thinking ahead on this, and we've got, you know, we're going to come up with several different PDPs. One of the critical things, in my opinion, is going to be to have good representation from the registrar community on each one of these, because it's so critical. Even in this task we're doing, yours and Tom's participation is so essential to make sure that we don't overlook things.
Right.
And to a lesser extent, registries because of the dispute process, but most importantly, registrars.
Yep. Just checking the priority value that was the priority group put on it was pretty low, 16. So I guess this is sort of a trade-off between low priority in that respect and ease of implementation.
Yeah, which I think is okay.
Yeah, it's a quick checkout counter. So
okay. All right. Well, then that takes us then to Tom's third grouping that he titled New Issues Related to the Current Transfer Policy. And the number three is whether there is a need for other options for electronic authentication, like a security token in the FOA, because of the security problems with email. Now, this clearly becomes a cost item for registrars, and probably could be registrants too, depending on how registrars handle it. And so it might only work for those who elect to do it, but that doesn't mean it still wouldn't be something worth pursuing. What are the thoughts on that?
Well, from the registrant perspective, you know, I sort of put this one in the category of anything that makes the process better, faster, more secure, et cetera, is a good thing.
And would you be willing to pay for getting a token, a certificate, digital ID?
I would, but I have unbelievably valuable domain names, so I'm an unusual person. And so I think that it might be that your notion of making it an opt-in affair for the registrant would be an option. I guess, you know, I'll sort of fall back to the original thought, which is anything that makes it work better sounds good to me.
Yeah.
You know, I hearken back to the really early days when the Internet was sort of the way, and, you know, email was pretty goofy. You know, we had a pretty tough time, and I sort of see this as just another incremental step in sort of 15 years of technical development around this.
Yeah,
and if there's a good secure token way to do this, then that's a good thing. And one of the nice things about this is that there are now a whole lot of relatively cheap, relatively easy to implement token technologies,
right,
that weren't there 15 years ago.
Tim, what are your thoughts on this one?
Well, you know, I agree. I just don't. I'm not sure that the my whole belief is that the losing registrar initiated process is the wrong way to look at this thing to begin with. and that if we flipped it around, contrary to everybody's belief, I don't think it's any more difficult to enforce than what we currently have, and that, you know, a transfer should start with the gaming registrar, who can actually authenticate the individual making the request better than the losing registrar ever will by just using something like the Whois database, which, you know, is problematic for a lot of reasons. And so, you know, it's really solve that issue, but you have to kind of turn it around in its head. Now, this tier token might help, but it doesn't really solve the real problems that I see with transfers, and that is trying to authenticate who's who.
Yeah.
So only the gaming registrar can do, but they're not allowed to get into the picture. So just trust the losing registrar got what he needed.
Now, do we address that question in one of these other ones? Because I tend to agree with Tim that, and I would put that in a much different category than this sort of technical issue. Like, you know, I view this as something that the geeks care about, whereas the issue that Tim is raising, I think everybody cares a lot about.
Maybe I don't think it is addressed elsewhere, but we could, wherever we put this one, we can, you know, certainly add that comment that consideration might be useful to consider in policy development. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I just worry that, you know, if we hand this one to geeks, you know, security geeks, they're gonna go in a different direction than if we hand this to a group of people with the question that Tim is raising.
Well, that's probably in our control. I mean, when I say our, in the GNSO's control, because if PDPs are formed, we're going to be looking for volunteers to be part of those PDPs, and so it'll depend a lot on who volunteers.
Yeah.
At the same time, we need to try to get a diverse mix of viewpoints in each PDP.
I guess what I'm talking myself into is the notion that we might want to keep this one pretty narrow and pretty technical, and then formulate another one to address the issue that Tim is raising, which really goes to the whole core of the process itself. I mean, what Tim is working on is something that would be quite a substantive change to the way things go.
That makes sense to me, but I'm not sure it's our role to add to the recommendations that that a review group has made and spent a lot of time on. You know, that's why I was trying to lump it in with this one. It's kind of a way of sneaking it in there so that at least that's considered, because maybe there's an alternative way. Doing something different is better than doing a security token.
Yeah, I think the reason it didn't get included anyway was because it's basically a whole different concept for transfers. It's not like a minor, or not even just a considerable change to the existing transfer policy. It's like it would be like a whole new transfer policy.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I kind of got left out.
On the other hand, I think it's a worthy conversation, and if there's a way to either start it or perhaps even have it and use this as the nose of the camel into the tent, I'm okay with that.
Which is what I was trying to do, since it wasn't specifically called out.
Yeah,
so is this okay in this third group? Just leave it as part of a third PDP group for now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. All right. That brings us then to, we already covered 9.
Yeah.
So we're now down to 10. Whether existing penalties for policy violations are sufficient, or if additional provisions penalties for specific violations should be added into the policy. Seems to me that this is an issue that comes up all the time with regard to compliance and everything else. We've been talking about it for years. And correct me if I'm wrong, Tim, but it doesn't seem like it'd be too hard to develop some progressive steps and for repeated violations. Do you think this is something that registrars would support?
Yeah, well, registrar has actually raised the issue, I believe.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me because it benefits them, too.
Right, right. So, yeah, I don't see why it wouldn't be supported.
So this is a good one to leave in that group, right?
Yeah.
And probably not a real tough one, but we don't need to worry about that right now. It certainly doesn't need to be isolated, I don't think.
Now, I agree. Let me start with that. But then, who are these penalties aimed at? Are they penalties aimed at registrars or at registrants?
Well, I don't know that there's any penalties you could impose on registrants unless you took their domain name away.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
Because there's no contractual relationship. I think basically it means registrars who are not following the policy. It's a compliance issue.
Okay. All right.
Anybody disagree with that?
Nope.
Yeah.
No. No.
Okay.
No, I'm fine with it.
All right. Then 11. Boy, we're really moving, guys.
Yeah.
We'll have to tell Tom that he was slowing us down, huh? Just kidding. whether registrants should be able to retrieve auth info codes from third parties other than the registrar. And my question is, like whom? I mean,
there's only one other place.
What is it?
Well, you see, currently, and that'd be the registry itself.
But the registries aren't the. I mean,
how do you authenticate who's asking? I mean,
exactly. And even in cases that these, you know, it's a little bit easier in the case of a thick registry. But even then, if the data isn't kept up to date, maybe it's just a few days behind or something, you have a lag, the registry is really not the authority, the registrar is.
Right, right. Yeah, so I didn't understand this one before. I don't understand it now. I mean, I understand the concern, but I don't know how we would solve it.
Yeah, is there any real way to do it without creating a terribly insecure process?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Doesn't seem like it to me.
Not major changes in a lot of other policies about the way registries and registrars operate.
Mike, as a business person, what's your thinking on this one?
This one falls pretty low in my interest level. I read it and sort of scratched my head and asked the same question that you guys just did, which is, I don't know where they come from. And I also share the concern that if we're not particularly careful, we could make the process a lot less secure rather than more secure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think the way I look at it is if somebody's frustrated with the lack of compliance, and so this is their answer. I don't think this is the way to go at it.
No, I agree with that.
We need better enforcement that registrars are supposed to make these up info codes available. And if it's not happening, then there needs to be an enforcement issue, not a...
Oh, is that what this is saying? Is that here I have a recalcitrant registrar that's not giving me my auth info, and so I can get it from somebody else?
Yeah.
I think that's pretty much it, yeah.
No, I think that's a bad plan. I think it's better to...
My inclination would be to put this in the recommendation for delete area, keeping in mind that when we put these back to the council and they take it to their constituencies, if people want to challenge any of our thinking, it's not as if we're making final decisions, but I would lean towards putting this in the delete group.
I'm fine with that.
Tim and Ola?
Yep. I agree with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm keeping a few notes myself, and then I'll check Olaf's notes to make sure I got it right.
We're all the other way around.
Pretty diplomatic, wasn't it?
Okay. Make sure I put that in the right place. Yeah, I did. Okay. All right. Brings us to 12. Whether the policy should incorporate provisions for handling partial bulk transfers between registrars, that is, transfers involving a number of names but not the entire group of names held by a losing registrar. Now, this is something, Tim, correct me if I'm wrong on this. I had several questions on this, but Neustar actually introduced a new registry service to accommodate this need. Did any other registries do it? I know we didn't.
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Yeah, I'm not aware of it either. I just thought I'd check to see if you were Now, certainly this puts a burden on the registry anytime you do this to validate lists of names with both involved registrars. I don't know that that's terribly big burden, but there's a load there. Registries would probably, now, in doing this, and this probably wouldn't be hard to solve either, registries would probably need indemnification, you know, between the registrars involved so that they're just following the instructions of the registrars. And my next question is there enough demand for this to go to the trouble of a PDP? Who was it? It was CFC, I think, was the company that was involved in wanting this. Was it from register.com or something? I don't even remember.
Yeah, because it was a partial list of the portfolio of names from register.com that went with that piece of their business. That business unit wanted to get those names over. We've had a few instances like that, but we usually work it out somehow with the parties. Like, we got one with CORE right now, an ISP who's moving, and they're a seller, and so they want to get their names moved over.
Does this relate to the fee if there's more than $50,000?
Yeah, I think that's probably really what it's getting to, is how can we circumvent fees associated, perhaps.
So is that something that should be looked at here? Is that really the crux of the problem?
My question is, you know, isn't this, you know, just a way for, you know, the registries to, you know, offer services or differentiate themselves or whatever? You know, if they see a value and they're getting requests from the customers to, for a bulk process or some kind of rates on a bulk process or whatever, then that's something that the registries can look at individually, just like Neustar did.
Yeah, right.
We hear a lot about one size doesn't fit all with the registries. This would be another one of those kind of.
Where did you hear that?
Here and there.
It is. And by the way, I can tell you that I know that they approached our business team on this, and for some reason they decided not to do anything about it. So I think it's probably a matter of just other priorities.
I think that another scenario is just that, you know, there are those folks who have big domain portfolios now and they sometimes sell chunks of their portfolio, and it can often be a lot of names. 5, 10, 15,000 names at a time. Is there a mechanism for a bulk transfer in that circumstance today?
Well, I think the only, and I haven't looked at it recently, somebody else can jump in if I get it wrong, but I think there's a mechanism that ICANN can authorize a bulk transfer. And if it's under 50,000 names, then ICANN authorize. But ICANN only does it in certain circumstances. And like the CFC example, the reasons didn't apply, so it couldn't be done that way. So it didn't come under those conditions. So it may be that this should be, it doesn't hurt to look at this issue. What do you guys think?
I think it's worthy of taking a look at. I'm not that kind of domain owner, so it doesn't matter to me. But, you know, there are folks that do have, some of them even would have more than 50,000, I suppose, and it's just a transaction. It's not a big thing. It's just they've sold a piece of their portfolio to somebody else, and they want to move all the domains at once.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with them wanting to do that or that there's a process in place to do it, but I would have a problem if we're going to say, well, there's going to be some minimum, you know, some cap on the fee imposed or that kind of thing, because I don't think that's appropriate. In the bulk transfer that ICANN's policy allows for, it's a case where, you know, one registrar, for example, is going under and it's the bulk transfer of all their names from one place to another. So it's not. It's very specific about what it applies to, and that it's, well, we've got a domain owner with 50,000 names that want to change registrars, so we're going to make it easy and give them a good fee. And why would we do that? We work closely with
domainers in that regard, and if there's a huge number of names, well, we try to make it as easy as we can for them to transfer out, and we work with the other registrar transferring in, and we give them pretty good feedback. But, you know, I don't think we'd be as cooperative if we had to do it for, you know, for nothing.
Well, I think that Tim, you've just raised a point that I don't think there's a huge amount of disagreement on. I don't think that this should happen for free or without sort of normal fee structure. I think there's a difference between that, you know, trying to evade a fee. I'm not keen on that at all. And this notion that as this domain portfolio holder concept continues to evolve, that people aren't going to be moving chunks of names around between each other. They used to sell them one at a time to each other. Now they sell them in clumps. And facilitating that, I think, would be a good thing for that facet of the industry.
Now, you know, I think the one thing that could be done, and it's probably the crux problem in reality, is that if a single entity is the actual registrant of a large group of names, you know, do you need, and they want to move 10,000 names, do you need 10,000 FOAs, or is a single FOA where you can demonstrate it's the same registrant in every case sufficient to move those names?
I thought that, it's been a long time, but I thought that the transfer policy allowed that, so you didn't have to have separate FOAs, but it's been so long since I looked at the details that I could be memory deficient there.
Yeah, and if it does, then I'm not sure where the issue is. Now, you know, one we're dealing with right now, and it's, and I don't think it really should fall under this. And so then if this is why this comes up, then I think it's inappropriate, and that is that we've got it, like I said, we have an ISP who was acting as a reseller who wants to move, and they want to move their portfolio of names. Well, you know, they're not an accredited registrar,
right.
So as much as we'd like to help them, you know, if they don't get the individual FOAs from their registrants, you know, how can we just sidestep that part of the process and say, yeah, we'll okay the transfers without the registrants having any knowledge?
And that's not an uncommon situation, is it?
No, it's not.
Oh.
But it's a different situation, and I don't know that this is going to, you know, this kind of a, the transfer policy can really deal with that. It's,
yeah, I wouldn't be terribly keen on that one, because it seems like that would also be a gigantic garage door to massive hijacking.
Yeah. Right.
And then it can put the registry in a vulnerable situation there too.
Yeah.
So, and that's what I was getting at earlier. Well, is this one's okay leaving in group three?
Okay with me.
Sure.
Okay. All right. That brings us then to number 13, which is whether additional provisions relating to transfer of registrations involving various types of WHOIS privacy services should be developed as part of the policy.
This one looked like the nose of another camel coming into the tent.
Well, you know, it's a real issue, I think, in the sense that registrars, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Tim, but are terribly dependent on WHOIS to be able to execute. A new registrar really has to use WHOIS to be able to execute a transfer. Now, in the case where the privacy service is the registrant, I suppose the process could still work. Are there cases with privacy services where it would be difficult, Tim, if you're the new registrar, the receiving registrar, to get the WHOIS information you need to, does that work out okay with privacy services?
Well, I think so. I mean, is it an issue? Sure, it raises an issue. You know, it's what the registrant opted into, and there's usually conditions around how to make a transfer happen. So, you know, I mean, the whole point of the, for example, with domains by proxy that we use, you know, that they actually become the registrant of record, and it's a separate agreement between them and the registrant. And they make it clear, you know, that none of these, there's certain things that aren't going to happen unless you want to take over the name, and we'll allow you to do that, and you cancel the privacy service, and then transfer is one of them. So if they actually want to transfer the name, then they have to cancel that service. And so part of the privacy, part of the added value to privacy is security.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's usually made clear by most registrars, I think, that offer it. It may not be in every case.
Yeah.
But I don't think, you know, that's obviously sometimes registrants don't understand it. They didn't read the agreements or whatever.
How common is it for registrars themselves to offer the privacy service?
How common?
Rather than through a third party.
Yeah, I'd say it's more common.
It's more common, okay. Oh, yeah. I didn't really know. So.
Yeah.
So is this one okay to leave in Group 3? For a little bit more investigation and work?
Sure. Yeah, as far as I'm concerned,
okay,
it is.
Yeah.
Okay, nobody.
The Ross Review group that I was a part of did see this as the nose of a camel coming into the tent and was pretty cautious about it. Because it's sort of, in that discussion, it was perceived as was sort of reopening the who is issue, and nobody really wanted to touch that, especially Ross at that point.
I mean, if I had my brothers, I'd rather see it just deleted, but, you know, that's just my personal...
Yeah, and I would support deleting it as well.
What do we think, guys? What's our rationale for deleting it?
Partly the rationale that came out of the review group was that we couldn't find an edge between this particular policy discussion and the larger who is policy discussion, since it raised so many of the same issues. And we felt that it was likely to become very long, very divisive, and unlikely to yield much in the way of an outcome. But we could use that as sort of a rationale.
Just a thought from my side. Is this something which could be a subject for, the who is studies?
No, it's just simple. If a registrant opts into privacy and they can opt out, then, you know, all this is just, you know, registrars who don't understand or don't want to deal with the situation. I mean, the registrants opted in. They've made a choice. They can undo that choice, but, you know, I just don't know where this can ultimately go.
So this is really a non-issue.
Yeah, well, it should be, but perhaps it is an issue. But my question was rather that perhaps this is something to be considered in Liz's camp, where she's reviewing all kinds of who is studies.
Well, some of the studies that were recommended, obviously no action has been taken on them yet, but certainly deal with privacy services and so forth. I don't recall whether any of them actually examine privacy services related to the transfer policy. They may have, but I just reviewed it very quickly yesterday. That little summary document that she sent out. So what's the? I don't have strong feelings on this. So if the group thinks we ought to put this in the delete cat, the recommended delete category, I'm okay with that. Is that the leaning?
Yeah, and maybe what we do is rather than use the divisive rationale that I just rattled off, maybe we use the non-issue rationale that Tim is describing.
And that's what I was getting at, because if, in fact, whether it's a privacy issue or not, you still have an official registrant that is the authority over the domain name.
Yeah, and so if people have an issue with that, they need to take that up with their privacy provider.
Yeah.
Right.
That make sense?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fine. I'm okay with that. Again, all this is going to be reviewed by the council and through council members to their constituencies. So there will be opportunity to discuss these further in a broader group.
Well, and Olaf, to your point, at that point, it could get sort of reframed and tacked on to the broader who is discussion. Because at that point, then it would be sort of the rules of the road of how privacy providers behave.
Although it doesn't seem to me that this needs to get into the who is discussion. I may be oversimplifying, but you know, the transfer policy, the authority for authorizing transfers is the registrant, and whether it's a privacy service provider or a registrar that's the registrant or whoever the intended registrant is, the policy still should work.
Yeah, that's true. I agree.
Yep.
Okay, I'm okay with that.
Okay. Well, I think we only have one more, guys.
Yeah.
Number 17, whether additional requirements regarding who is history should be developed for change tracking of who is data and use in resolving disputes. Now, being a dispute resolution provider as a registry, this would be really helpful, okay? But it also probably has quite a lot of impact if we were to do something here. How do you think we should handle this? Who is data isn't escrowed, is it, Tim?
It is now. It's starting to be.
So
yeah, Iron Mountain.
You guys are the first one. So that does include who is data? Is there any way to use the who is data for this, that registries could use it? It's probably kind of hard, huh?
Suggestion would come up, and I think it's probably doable, but it would be, but there's a lot of issues around how we work that out, how we give access,
Yeah, it would be pretty complicated.
And it also involves the escrow provider because, you know, they're guaranteeing a certain amount of indemnification and security and stuff too, so they're going to have input into how that all happens.
Is this one of those that should be a isolated as its own PDP?
You know, the other problem with this one is
go ahead, Mike, I'm sorry.
Okay. You could imagine a fair amount of abuse of this information. If it's not really well protected. I think I'm sort of adding on to your comment, Tim, that the process for which people get access to this information would have to be pretty carefully thought out. Because otherwise I could see an IP lawyer, you know, going to town trying to reverse domain hijack a name and getting a hold of this data.
This is the kind of thing that could be facilitated by a centralized who is. I'm not necessarily advocating for that, but so that because it really is a problem for registries that are dealing with disputes and going back in time to find out what the who is record was at a given date.
Maybe the analogy is to the real estate records that are on file at county courthouses in a way. Maybe that's the rationale behind this.
Well, the rationale on this makes perfect sense to me. I don't have any trouble understanding the rationale. It's probably pretty complicated to do.
Well, it's another one like the earlier one that sort of changes the transfer process a good deal. Maybe this is...
I think it has more to do with the dispute process than it does the transfer process itself.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
It does relate back, though, to, you know, the multiple transfers.
Yeah.
I'm liking this one. And it could be a pretty tasty...
Oh, it could be. I think there's huge potential here. There's huge challenges, too. Is it appropriate to group it with the other things we have in the last group? Or should it be isolated, or should it be moved up with the one on the multiple transfers and things like that?
I'm liking that last option, actually.
Yeah, so am I.
Move it up to, what was that, group two?
Yeah, enhancements to the current transfer dispute policy.
Okay. It's a pretty heavy-duty one, but I'm okay with that.
That's kind of the crux of the other issue there.
So we would put that back in group two. Let me find group two. There we go.
Combined with anything, or
perhaps
clustered with.
You want it clustered with 9 and 8?
Yeah.
Oh, this is a sizable thing.
Yeah, this group 2 has turned into a pretty big GDP.
Well,
we might want to think about.
Well, rather than try and solve that right here, what I was going to suggest we all do between now and our call next week is everybody take a look, and as soon as Olaf gets his notes out, I'll revise my little summary, because I've been kind of doing that as I'm going right here, and make sure I have it right, and I'll get that out as soon as possible. And if before our meeting next week, if we can decide, each of us kind of take a look at this with the idea that, hey, we're getting close to coming up with a recommendation of several PDPs, and here's the groupings of them, so that our call next week would be primarily devoted to discussing whether we're comfortable with putting forth the groupings that we have and whether we want to make any changes to that.
Yeah, and maybe the goal at the end of the call is to have those groups done.
Yeah, and then it's just a matter of, you know, writing up our recommendations to the council.
Right.
And, of course, the another question we're going to have is it would probably be helpful for us if we have an opinion that we agree on in suggesting whether some of these could be done simultaneously, or whether they should be done serially, and even, you know, some recommendations like I was suggesting, like it's going to be really critical on all the PDPs to have good registrar involvement, probably the most critical factor, but you also want, you know, people with diverse points of view so that you don't get some work done and then you come back and you get opposition late in the game. Does that make sense to just, you know, to shoot for that in our next meeting with Olaf? If you can get me the notes early tomorrow, then I will try and turn around tomorrow the revised grouping document that I started, and then ask everybody on the group. And it'll be nice having Tom take a look at what we did with fresh eyes.
I'll get it to you very early, your tomorrow.
Okay, good.
Fairly early, my tomorrow.
Okay, that works for me. That 9-hour difference works pretty well, doesn't it?
well, no, it's more than that. I'm 1 a.m. now. Oh, I'm talking about it today.
Talking about today.
Yeah, I've shifted.
Okay.
I'm into Friday.
Yeah. You're into Friday?
Yeah.
Where are you at?
No, sorry. Thursday.
Yeah,
I'm at.
Okay.
Well, not
oh,
meeting
yeah.
2 days
that's
ahead.
A,
no, no.
It's a 2-day international.
We're getting late.
I say,
you can hear that.
Where is Olaf?
I'm in Taipei. All places.
But he flew twice around
well,
the world.
Well, is there anything else we need to talk about today, guys?
Just to confirm date for next call.
That's right. Yeah, is the same time next week okay? I mean, I guess I should look at my calendar too. I don't know if I put something in there. I might have put a placeholder. That would be on the 5th. No, I didn't. So it looks like it's okay for me on Wednesday, March 5th, same time.
Works for me.
So.
I'll be checking here real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
My computer will let me hear.
Okay.
I'm wide open all day, so.
Mine looks pretty good right now. I'm sure it'll change, but as long as I get something locked in, I'll. Get that taken care of.
Yep, it looks good for me too.
Okay, good. So I'll send an email off to Glenn and let her know that we're going to do same time. And we may be, you know, that'll be close. That may not have to be a real long meeting, but we may be really close then, other than finalizing it and everybody getting a chance to look at our final document that we present to the council. So at most.
Right.
Two more meetings, we actually may be able to do via email the finalization of the document.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys. This was a very productive session.
Good deal.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Have a good day.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.